The tour is over.
Did you do like a massive mic drop? What was your final?
My final joke.
City?
My final city was
your final city and your final.
Okay,
joke.
My final city was. This is how insane I am. Was Pittsburgh, which a couple things that were really noteworthy about Pittsburgh is I saw Sarah Axtell, who created our logo and our intro music. So it was really a wonderful thing.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. So that was incredible. And then I left a joke. I said a joke at the end that really brought the house down. And I was really proud of it. And I will repeat it here to smaller fanfare. But it really, like, I loved getting to a point where I would make Rachel laugh. Like, if I could make her laugh on stage, it always made me really happy because I was like, oh, okay. Like, she's very serious about the subject, right? And she's like, mm-hmm. I don't laugh often or I don't cry often. And I'm like, okay, so if I could get her to do any of those things, it was a win for me. So at one point, got her. She did pinch me the last day because it was St. Patrick's Day and I wasn't wearing green. So she pinched me. But a question people often ask is, if I am with a serial killer, how do I get out of it? How do I get out of it? What do I do? And she said, serial killers need you to be an object to get off, right? Once you ruin their fantasy, it's over. So if you could get to know them and become less of an object, as soon as you become a real life person, it's hard. And then they'll just like, they will lose their erection and run away. To which I responded, story of my life. But my favorite parts about the tour was I learned a lot. I met listeners. I finally got to meet Jamie and Haley.
That's so fun.
Which was so fucking
great.
Fun. It was so nice they came out.
You got to meet them. They stayed in the lobby or what?
Yeah, they were in the theater. So what the best thing about it is right. Like with Six Chick Flicks or with my show, it's like my face is on the poster and I'm like in such a clear costume. So what was fun about this gig was I was like, oh, I'm just going to go out to the lobby and hang out and like see people who are about to see the show and they'll have no idea I'm in the show. Like that was a really mm-hmm. fun moment. And
totally.
And I was like doing an intro. So it was like, I wasn't mm-hmm. like, I'm not the headliner. So I was like, oh,
yeah.
I can just come and hang out. What was also really fun is this is a story I have to tell you because it's so good. So there was this one place, it was in Omaha, where we had some technical difficulties. And my job mm-hmm. was I came out, I told a couple jokes, introduced our headliner, the psychologist of the AWA. And in this circumstance, the tech dropped out. So they needed to like restart it, fix it. And like the lights were down. And I was like, do you need me to go on? And he was like, yeah, go on. So they put my mic on and I just did like 5 minutes of crowd work.
You did?
Yes, it was so fun. It was the best. I did like very specific true crime crowd work.
That's so, I wish I could have seen that.
I think we have it recorded. I should see if I can find it because it's really good. But
yeah,
one of the things I brought up, because again, like you're just like, what am I going to say? I talked about like our favorite maid of honor speech. So, you know, mm-hmm. about like this person statistically most likely to kill you. And it got a huge laugh there. So a couple days mm-hmm. later, a week later, I'm at my cousin's bridal shower, which is, it's because I was doing a show in Milwaukee that night and it was in Chicago and I could drive. I rented a car. I got there. It was amazing. I was so glad to be there to support her because I can't go to her wedding because I'll be in the UK. And she's a listener, Becky, shout out to you. Love you. And so I'm at the bridal shower and I'm writing down the gifts, right? The favorite job of everyone, writing down the gifts, which is sometimes a challenge because you're like, Who is that person? I see them, but I can't ask who because I saw it. You know, it's an interesting, delicate balance, right? So
not a job for me
because it's like
face in-laws, and name blindness.
Well, it's like the in-laws that I just met that day, and I'm like,
that you just met, and you can't be like, who, name again?
No. So my cousins from my side were like they saw me struggling, and they're like, Becky, who got that for you? And like got a name, and we're like, thank God.
Oh,
nice, really
nice, good assist.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm so fucking exhausted, Quinn. Like, I haven't slept for a month. it's been a lot of work and I haven't had a break. Like truly, I've been working from whether it's driving or traveling to like finishing show, sending emails, going to sleep, waking up, doing it all over again. So I'm in the shower and I'm like, just like my default autopilot mode is like, let's tell jokes. So I legitimately tell the joke about the maiden, like this, you're statistically more likely, like the person that's statistically more likely to kill you is your husband. Quinn, it falls on absolute silence.
What?
No. Listen, I don't think her future in-laws are used to our family. My cousins look at me like, Carrie, Becky is like dying because she sees it fall on deaf ears and it's her set, but she's like... And I sat there and I go, had this realization that I was like, I've been talking murder too long. Like I landed.
You think that it's appropriate. That does happen. That does happen that you think it's an appropriate thing for any and all occasions.
It's so not. And his mother goes, should I be worried about my son? And I'm like, what was your name again for this gift that you bought? Anyway, that was, those were some highlights.
How did you like I wanted to ask you how you liked, didn't you get to stay on tour at the Madonna Inn?
I stayed at the Madonna Inn and I also stayed at the Ambassador Inn, which is where Jeffrey Dahmer killed one of his victims.
I can't imagine that creates an amazing ambiance.
It's actually a really cool hotel.
Or that they're
leaning in
and they have like fake blood splatter on the wall. Like
our experts stayed in the room where it happened, and the room is like a smaller version. Like, and she's like, she walked in and it was like watching someone who was like starstruck because she's obsessed with Dahmer.
Huh.
And it was like she was like so happy to be in the room where it happened.
Okay. Can't Hamilton. Relate, but.
You know, the place was really cool. It's like they have done a really nice job where there's like a lot of the original Art Deco stuff. So it's like really beautiful in there. And the rooms are really spacious because except for Dahmer's room. But they like all of the rooms have a plate on it. But for Dahmer's, they use a piece of paper because I don't think it's a room that's rented often.
Oh, interesting.
But they were all I mean, like this was back in.
Well, what about Madonna?
The Madonna Inn, you know, it was fun. I stayed in a room I don't think I loved. It was more stressful. I stayed in the golfer room because I thought it would have like, it had an outdoor area that was super cute, but it wasn't great. It really wasn't great.
Okay.
So
it sounds so weird.
It was weird. I like picked up, but there were like a lot of rooms to pick from. And I chose the golfer room because again, it had like an outdoor little like fireplace area.
That's weird that you picked that. Okay. Okay.
That's why I picked it.
Okay, outdoor fireplace sounds great.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a day off and I was exhausted. And it was also like on the first floor, so like of a motel vibe. So it's like, it wasn't my favorite. It wasn't my favorite place that I went.
Okay.
But I'm glad I went
there. Did you get to see anybody else's clever room?
No, but I saw pictures of them.
You guys were all like, it's our day off. Let's get the fuck away from each
other.
That's
all I want to do. Like, I know this about me. You know this about me. I love alone time.
Yeah. Me too.
I love alone time. Give me alone time. Give me death. I love it.
Yep. Give me Jeff.
So that's
she
why
loves
I think,
Jeff. Like, a long kiss, I good am, night.
Good night. Good night, Gracie. I do think that like I am an extrovert. We know that to be true. But I really think like I think I have more introvert qualities than people realize.
Okay. Yeah, the golfer room.
What do
room,
you think?
I'm looking at.
Oh, you're looking at the golfer room? Listen, it was the outdoor that got me. It was the outdoor space, but here's the deal. It was ADA compliant, which is lovely.
Did you do the fire escape? What do you mean ADA compliant?
Well, like it was on the first floor, right? It was for handicapped folks.
Did you put a fire on?
Yes, okay. Of course I did. But it was cold. It wasn't that night. You know what? It was fine. It was totally fine. Was it my favorite place we stayed? No. I had a couple of other favorites. The last hotel I stayed in Pittsburgh was this hotel called The Joinery, and I will out them as being not a good hotel. It was also RIP after it was a 4-star hotel, okay? Quinn?
All right.
I walked in the room. I have to show you. I walked in the room.
Should we do a travel show?
We should do a travel show. Well, yeah, let's add more to the to-do list. That's what I need right now. Great idea.
Yeah, we're doing great. Sometimes we post on social media. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we post the episode on the right day. Sometimes we don't. We got this so we could do video. We never have learned how to do that.
We haven't had jokes that are worth putting up yet. We're figuring it out.
Okay. Okay. All right.
This is, I walked into my room the last day, yeah. And this is the first thing I see.
A conference table?
It's a conference table, no windows.
With a whiteboard.
I walk in and I was like, what's going on? And I was like, I think this is the wrong room. And they're like, no, your room is around this corner. And it was like around the corner of a co- it was so weird.
Did you hold any conferences?
No. I was like, get away from me. Get people away from me.
What a waste.
It was a waste.
What a waste.
It was a waste. It was a windowless conference room.
I held a conference.
And then
a quick put together a conference for that room.
And a sad bed. It was
when life hands you lemons. Hold conferences.
But I was like, I picked this. The hotel pictures, the pictures fucking duped me, which was frustrating as hell, but you know. Shit happens.
You learned a lot,
I learned a lot. I learned a lot.
And that's what counts.
That's what counts.
I did want to give a shout out to somebody that left us a nice review called Bad Vass, I think.
Sound
anyway,
more uncertain.
The person said that we're their BFFs. And
hey!
Bad Vass said, I feel like I actually know these women and that we are best friends. They crack me up, but they're also honest and serious when needed. Absolutely the only podcast I will listen to on a long drive alone. And to that, I say,
we did
giddy
it.
Up.
Giddy up. Horsey.
Love to be on that drive with you. And we are best friends.
We're best friends.
You're right.
And let me tell you about my best friend. You hosted another
murder.
Did you have to die again?
A murder in a building. No, this one was a masquerade. And the wealth in this case.
Yeah, masquerade's very Eyes Wide Shut, which we know is
like
one of my
Jersey
least favorite
Italian
movies.
Wealth vibes.
Oh, like Dyker Heights vibes.
But they were, they were Upper East Side wealth, but
wow.
It was,
wow.
It was, like a lot of like girls in cute sweatsuits with their boyfriends. It was a family that had 5 kids and the girls were in like cute sweats and, they were doing things like when they'd get accused of murder, they would like be like, shot, shot, shot. You know, it was like a lot of that. And like, it was a family of 5. It was a Brady Bunch situation, like 2 marriages, 5 kids between them come together. All of them, all their significant others. Everyone's between like the ages of like 20 and 28. It was amazing. It was amazing.
How
they
drunk,
all just yell at each other.
How
but
drunk
in a really
did you
fun
get?
Way.
How drunk did you get?
Actually, I walked in and she was like, would you like some champagne? And I was like, well, yes, I would. And I had 1 glass of what tasted like very expensive champagne. And they were all eating delivered Chinese food. And she got in the mail a bunch of masquerade outfits and was pulling them out and was like, you can wear one too, honey. And like gave me one. And
wait,
I was like,
love
this. Incredible.
Oh, that sounds yeah. fun. It was like perfect amount of like chill and airs. You've been like these
yes,
parties are
it was great.
Fun. It's
I love
weird.
Them.
Yeah, but they don't really
say yes every time.
Yeah, but they don't vet the customers. You could walk into some weird shit.
I know. You know what? One time they were going to send me to I can't remember where, like a town on Long Island that I had not heard of. And I looked up like the house I was supposed
and
to
it was
go
like
to,
the Long Island serial
looked
killer.
A little weird. Like it just looked like a weird house. Like it just didn't get like a great vibe. And I was like, so am I doing this with an assistant? Because sometimes we are. And she's like, no, just you. And I was going to drive to like a random house on Long Island. And I just felt weird. And then I intimated a little bit that I felt weird, but I was like, it's fine. I need the money. I'll take the gig. I'll die for my art. And then a few days before the gig, she was like, it's my mistake. They want a male. And I was like, okay. Whatever that means.
Hey,
it's not a stripper.
Like, thank
what,
you.
Who do, what do you care if it's a male or a female that hosts your murder mystery?
They're
but I was like, whatever
guy.
They want.
Also, trust
I
your blank.
Had, like,
your
a sense
blank,
of relief.
Yeah,
that, I had a sense of relief. Yeah.
And then we never heard from that guy again.
That's right. He has never been seen since.
Disappeared.
So,
but you got.
I assume he's still there having a great time.
I assume it's. Well, I'm not going to even assume anything. What I can tell you is you're getting more gigs now, which is great.
Gigging it up. Tonight I'm hosting a Jeopardy, but that's remote.
Oh, that's great.
I know. Are you, pajama night.
Pajama night at the Posnoskis. I'm going to come over on Friday. Can I?
Be skippy.
Is that okay with you?
Of course.
Okay, cool.
Oh, of course.
I just want to see the kids before I leave because I'm going to be like. And you,
oh,
and you, Matt, and you, Matt, and I need to see Matt to let him know I'm not mad at him for the AirPods.
Oh, I wish you were going to make him feel you were mad.
I'll give him a
wife's job and I'll be mad enough for both of us.
No, I'll listen. If you need backup, you know my ass will back you up. I'll be like, that was really shitty that you tried to put your AirPods in and you fucked Quinn's computer up, which, by the way, we haven't talked in person about how you had to give your computer up.
I'm still on it. They can't get their act together to take it from me. And they keep trying to get their act together. And then something falls through where, let's say, I don't write back or they don't write back or they pick a day, but that's not going to work for me. Or
wait, so are they, is someone here,
they don't write back about
it. Is someone like supposed to come to your house and pick it up?
Yeah, a messenger.
Oh, so that's why you like stripped this of all of your identity.
It's been stripped, but now I'm replacing my identity onto it and I'll have to restrip it. But
did you buy yourself a new computer?
No, but I need to. They're thousands of dollars. Have you heard?
I have heard they're expensive, like $1,000. It's a lot.
My computer works, but it disengages from the internet every few minutes enough so that I don't know that you and I could record an episode.
You know, my computer is still at your house that you could probably use.
Oh, that's
for recording.
Good intel. All right. All right. But when you come Friday, teach me how to open it. And
my concern, though, is that you can't use it for everything because it's a lot of stuff on there.
Oh, I don't need to use it for everything. I just need to use it for recording.
Oh, then
let's
do that.
Other computer because I've been trying to get more used to my old computer so that I'm less emotional.
Yeah, let's see. Let's figure out my computer because then we can use that for recording. That sounds great. Cool. Wow, look at you. You're rich in computers.
Did we do that?
No, we didn't. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepy.
No Patreons this week.
I'm Carrie Ipama.
Do something about that, folks. And I'm disappointed. I'm going to strike soon if nobody joins Patreon. I do cross picket lines, though, so don't be that stressed about it.
We don't talk about that on this podcast, I
thought.
I jump
over. I jump back. I jump over. I jump back. Whatever suits me and my interests is what I'm going to do. I am a union of one.
Quinn. Union of Quinn.
And I am my union rep.
And listen, I get along with me just fine. So that's what it is.
I don't need friends. I don't. Your card's full.
Your dance card is so full. It's too full, actually.
I'm turning people away at the door.
I'm just glad I got in.
It's true. But
it's because I don't, listen, it's because I don't bully you into making certain carrot cake recipes. That's a callback from last week. It's because I don't bully you.
No, it's because you're gone 80% of the time. Now that's a friendship I can make room for.
I'm the best friend of somebody who's kind of like, I don't want to fully commit.
I don't really want a friend. I'm gone a lot. Okay, great.
Works for me.
Friendship.
Just a perfect friendship. When other friendships make you stay home, I will soon be gone. A lot of jig, jig, jig.
I'll let you be all alone.
That's it. Okay. Thank you, Cole Porter. Hold on. Let me tell you a story.
I'm going to get smart labels.
I'm going to get organized.
And the way that it works, you buy the smart labels on Amazon and it shows up and there are these QR code labels. You pop them on your storage bin, you scan it, and on the Smart Labels app, you can then catalog everything going into the bin. You can give it names. You can give it a description. You can take pictures. Then you put the bins away in your basement, in your attic. What do I care? And then way on down the line when you're like, I can't even remember what was in that bin.
You don't have to open the stupid box cover and rummage like a little raccoon to figure out where you left the dang Christmas lights. You can look on the app, you can see the QR code, and they're color-coded, so you can go right to that box and grab them. Could you imagine how much time you'd save by not having to open up each box and checking inside it?
I'm no magician, but this sounds like magic.
Ugh.
So if you're going to do any spring cleaning, because tis the season
to be cleaning, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, go ahead, search on Amazon for Smart Labels, one word, and get started with your Smart Labels pack today. Get organized. I got this information from Wikipedia,
from
New York Post, all that's interesting. I want to tell you a little bit about this guy, John Favara. I assume it's Italian. Favara beans.
Sounds it.
So he lives in Howard Beach, New York, probably close to where you probably were going to be scheduled to do a murder mystery. And you declined. But he lives in Howard Beach. He is a service department manager for a furniture manufacturer. Have you heard of it? It's a nondescript furniture manufacturer. So, you know, it's the 80s. It's the 80s. He's like, you know, he's working a job in Howard Beach.
Joanne Furniture.
Yeah. Joanne Fabrics.
Ashley.
Ashley Furniture.
Ashley Furniture.
Joanne Fabrics. You're mixing up your furniture, your upholstery and your furniture again, Quinn. He's 51 years old. He's married. He has a kid who he adopted. I'm not sure if like the kid was from his wife's previous relationship or if this is a kid they both adopted. But either way, he's got a kid. And here's the deal. July 28th, 1980, he disappears without a trace.
The kid or the man?
The man.
Got it.
Bummer. I really was hoping for like some impact statement. You're like, I actually need clarification. Like you didn't really.
Like, I have no idea what you just said.
I was hoping for like some intrigue because I'm about to go into some like background information. And you're like, wait. Can you back up?
Who?
That's how you tell
it. I'm the present keeper. And who are you again?
And that is how you tell a story, folks. People love how we tell stories. Boom. Big moment. I'm sorry. I need you to go back.
They keep coming back for more. But is it more they want or is it just clarification?
Probably they just want less story. Anyway, moral of this story is he's gone. Poof. Disappeared. Now, let's get into what happened leading up to this. He disappears July 28th. It is, we're going to go back in time to March 18th, 1980. 4 months before John disappeared, he was driving his car down a side street in Howard Beach, New York. At the same time, this little boy, Frank, who just made the football team at school, he was like so excited. And apparently just like a sidebar, I don't know if this is true, but apparently like he didn't get on the team at first. And then his dad like spoke to the coach and suddenly he got on the team. But either way, Frank was like super stoked. He just got on the football team and he's like, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. So he goes over to his friend's house. And his friends have one of those mini motorbikes. It's like a motorized mini bike. And Frank gets on this little bike. And his friend's like, hey, let me tell you how to do it. And Frank's like, no, I want to ride. Let's go. Like, he's super jazzed, super having fun. And his friend is like letting a bunch of his friends take turn. Frank gets on. He gets on the bike and he absolutely goes for it. And before you know it, Frank goes out into the street. And the story is a little bit confusing, so let me try to tell one side of the story first. Frank goes outside of the street. He is right next to a big dumpster. Apparently, it is in John Favara's blind spot. John Favara sadly collides with this 12-year-old boy, and he kills him. Frank dies. His full name is Frank Gotti. Yes, that Gotti. Frank Gotti.
Not great.
It's not good at all. He is the fourth child of John Gotti and his wife, Victoria, and their second son. If you don't know about John Gotti, he's a big deal. He's one of New York's most notorious mobsters. In fact, he was just released from prison in 1977, 3 years before. John Favara is John Gotti's backyard neighbor. So he accidentally hits Frank, and it is ruled accidental, and no charges were filed against John Favara. So that's one side of the story.
I don't think you need to file charges when you're a gangster, by the way.
So,
because you filed death sentences.
I read four articles on this. Two of them said this story where he was driving and there was a dumpster. The bike scooted out before John could see it. And he collided and hit Frank and killed Frank. Frank was rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. And what's important is he was rushed to the hospital. His mother came. His sister came to the hospital to wait for news from the doctor. The doctor says he didn't reveal any information until John Gotti showed up. And John Gotti would later say that it was, what did he say? He would later say that it was the hardest thing he ever had to do to tell his wife that their son was dead. And he said just seeing his wife sitting in the waiting room made him afraid for the first time in his whole life.
Ugh.
So two articles, like I said, describe it as an accidental accident, and there were no police charges filed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
However, in two articles, and both of them use source materials from the Gottis, from their daughter, Victoria Gotti, This is the story that they laid out. Yes, Frank made the football team. He was really, really excited. All of the actions from Frank Gotti are the same. He gets on his motorbike and he goes into the street. From the family's perspective, what happened was is John Favara was driving the car drunk. He hit Frank and he dragged his body 200 yards. And neighbors had to say,
whoa,
stop.
Very different story.
Very different story.
Very different story.
The neighbors had to say, stop. And he wouldn't stop because he was so drunk. He was so fucked up out of his mind.
Wow.
In the article, it claims that when he got out and he saw that he had dragged this 12-year-old body under his car, he shouted immediately about how this 12-year-old boy, Frank, was at fault. And he was super belligerent and drunk, and he said it wasn't his fault. And it got so bad that he didn't even clean the car that hit their son, or he didn't even get his car fixed, which might be true in both stories that the car wasn't fixed right away. But there was The family will say he had my brother's blood on the car. And it was like an insult to injury, and that he would play music loud at night. But I'm going with what the Gotti story is, okay, right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Frank's mother, when her son dies, she is Victoria Gotti, John Gotti's wife. She is absolutely devastated. And I do not think that is up for question. I don't think anybody would question that. She is heartbroken. She is horrified. She is shocked. That night she comes home, she breaks a mirror. She tries to kill herself. She also tries to swallow pills. John calls the doctors to get someone to come over to subdue his wife. At the same time, John Favara, and there's a lot of Johns, it's an Italian neighborhood. John Favara consults with a local priest who is like a friend of the Gottis who knows people, right? They're in the Catholic world. And he's like, listen, do not go to that funeral. Don't show your face. FBI, which makes sense, FBI agents who normally hold surveillance at wakes and funerals, especially with the mob, they stayed away out of respect because it was the death of a child. While this is happening, John is slowly receiving death threats. 2 days after the incident, after Frank Gotti died, whether it was an accident or he was a drunk, we don't know, but I can just say the facts are he was never charged, and I assume if he was drunk, he would have been charged. That's my assumption. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I also think the Gottis were probably very well connected with local police, so maybe they didn't want him charged. They didn't want him in jail. So 2 days after the accident, the police get a call from a woman, a random woman, and says the driver of the car that killed Frank Gotti will be eliminated. A detective goes to warn John about the threat, and John responds, that kind of stuff only happens in the movies. So 2 days after, the Gotti family's story is that there was one night not long after their brother was murdered, after her brother was murdered, that they heard music coming from John Favara's house. And when Victoria, when Frank's mother gets out, she's pissed. She's like, I see you celebrating. Fuck you. My son is dead. She goes over and she tries to tell him to shut the music off. And apparently he smiles at her and she loses it. She goes home. She gets a baseball bat. She goes and smashes the car further in that hasn't been fixed yet. And she tries to ring the doorbell and give him a piece of her mind. In another article, there's a story where John Favara tries to go to their home to apologize, and she chases him out with a baseball bat. So there's like a lot of like...
Yeah, I see. There's very conflicting. He trying to be a good guy and they were pissed? Was he being a dick and they were pissed?
Exactly.
It's like, we know they were pissed.
Well, and frankly, like any mother would be pissed. And this is their backyard neighbor. Like they're now in the same neighborhood. Yeah. This is a very sticky situation.
Terrible.
What makes it even stickier is that these people are connected, and not just connected, they are the connections. They are the mob. So there's a lot, like, we do know with her and a baseball bat, I feel based on all the information, she does attack the car and hammer. She tries to with the baseball bat, and John Gotti restrains her and brings her back home. And she's heavily medicated and subdued in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. She tries to kill herself. She's a mother who's lost her child. It's horrifying. It is a tragedy. So it's a month after, it's April 13th. John Favara's car that apparently was not yet repaired was stolen from his home, which I can imagine being in the same neighborhood and seeing the car that killed your child still dented is horrifying. The car was taken and it was discovered less than a mile from John's home. A month later, on May 19th, Frank Gotti's prayer card from his funeral was left in John Favara's mailbox, almost like, hey, mm-hmm. The next day, Frank Gotti's photo is in his mailbox. It feels like people are like warning him. He's getting warnings like, mm-hmm. Get out. What are you doing? We're not forgetting. So his car was discovered after it was, you know, taken. The next day, someone spray painted murderer on the car. An acquaintance of both parties, someone who knew both people. Again, it's a neighborhood. It's a small town. It's a small part of New York, right? An acquaintance tells John, get out of the neighborhood and get rid of the car. You are a marked man. Get the fuck out of there. Like I said, at some point, Frank's mother hits the car, damaging it further. Apparently, John Favara refuses to press charges on that. So it's not long after that he puts his house on sale. He takes a hint, and by a hint, he takes what the only option, which is like, get the fuck out of there. This is around like June or July. On July 25th, 1980, John Gotti books a flight for him and his whole family to get out of town and go to Florida. They are going to go somewhere else, somewhere warm, where they can mourn and be together. 3 days later, on July 28th, 1980, John Favara disappears with the Gotti family all out of town.
Gone. Yeah.
Here is apparently what happened. So John Favara knew there was a hit on him, so he tries to get out of town on July 28th, but a little too late. Witnesses say, and again, witnesses, I think, mentioned this once and everybody really clammed up. But witnesses say that John was last seen being taken and forced into a van and beaten while he was on his way to work that morning. This is what people say it played out as. As Favara approached his car, he spotted these guys who were out to get him and he turns to run. One guy shoots him twice with a silencer and Favara yells, no, no, please, my wife. He struggles to get off the ground. Another guy hits him over the head with like a 2x4, picks him up, throws him in a van. Another guy takes his keys and takes his car and follows the van. Him and the car were driven to a salvage yard in East New York, and his body was stuffed in a barrel and then filled with cement. And it was disposed of in the barrel in an ocean just off of Brooklyn. And his car was crushed at a salvage yard. These are all people that are connected and are quiet. And these things only came out later. What I will tell you is that no one's ever discovered John Favara's body. He is gone. There's no evidence of where he went. We do have some people that have flipped, that have given some stories, but like all we have are stories. We have no proof. There was a diner owner that apparently saw this attack and told police. And soon after, three men entered his diner and just sat there and stared at him for 15 minutes. And then they left. And so what did he do? He avoided the police. He sold his business and he moved away.
Okay.
The Gottis returned from their vacation August 4th. And the police are like, okay, we got to ask them these questions. John Gotti goes, really? I wish I could help you, gentlemen, but I'm sorry. I don't know nothing about this.
Okay.
And then he also says, I don't know what happened to him. I'm not sorry if something did. He never sent me a sympathy card. He never apologized. He never even got his car fixed. I don't know what happened. I'm not sorry if something did happen. He killed my kid. His wife, Victoria Gotti, the mother of Frank, says, let them prove it. They have a better shot at finding Jesus Christ's bones. And apparently it's worth noting that John didn't necessarily want revenge when it first happened, but when he saw his wife and how much it affected her, how distraught he was, she was, he promised her revenge. Again, there's no body. They could not investigate it as a death. Informants also say that maybe he was chopped up with a chainsaw and put in barrels of acid. No one is ever arrested in connection to the abduction or murder. And in 1983, just 3 years after he went missing, John Favara's wife had him officially declared dead, probably to collect on some Social Security or life insurance. I guess there's like not a lot of proof. I feel like 3 years after, she's like, he's gone and I know it and the police know it. So they had him declared dead in 1983. And each of Gotti's kids, all of Frank's siblings, whenever they had a son, they named them Frank in memory of their brother.
Well,
so it's a really sad story.
You just feel bad for everybody.
I feel sad for everybody. I do think it's interesting. And again, two of the articles, it was an accident. Two of the articles, he was drunk.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The idea that these articles presenting things as facts.
Yeah. And again, they're too conflicting. And
we're seeing very different things.
You're seeing different things. But I I don't know about you, but there is I'm inclined to believe. Okay. Gotti's, don't come after me.
Careful.
I know. I think that by him being drunk, it makes it cleaner. I think by him, whatever the story is, by them thinking he is drunk. And you know what? I think they believe he was drunk. I think at this point, when the truth happens, it's their side, your side, and then there's something in the middle. Like maybe he was a careless. I don't know. I don't know the truth, but I do think that if they could tell themselves that he was drunk, it makes it cleaner.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, that's a story of Frank Gotti and John Favara, a very sad story where,
there are no winners.
If there's an accident, that is like the last person you want to have an accident with, you know?
No, but I'd just leave very quickly after.
It was the fact that he's like, I know them. That happens in the movies. And you're like, get out.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I am here to tell you of the Winston Diamond heist.
Fun. Let's do it.
Well, this is The Guardian, New York Times, and a really fun article that I read in Vanity Fair written by Adam Leith-Golner. And this is, I'll just tell you as we go. I'm not going to spoil my own story.
Not Henry Winston. 6th, Not Henry.
2007.
Harry.
Yes,
Harry Winston.
Harry. October 6, 2007, we're in Paris. We're at Harry Winston Paris, where they store all the rare jewels of the world in the Golden Triangle districts of the, how do you say it? Champs-Élysées.
That is not how you say it, but I sounded very... Champs-Élysées.
I mean, look, there's necklaces there that are worth like... millions, billions. It's crazy.
I haven't heard that denomination of number. So that's serious.
It's very serious. And that's very safe. The police station's a couple doors down. Employees are not allowed to go into work by themselves. You got to be with a friend. You got to leave your keys. You don't have your own keys. They're kept off site in a company keeps the keys, you know?
Yeah. They're just limiting as much riffraff excess as possible so that if something happens.
So like the security guard gets there in the mornings at 9:30 and the company comes, gives him the keys. He waits outside with those keys till staff arrives at 9:50. They all go in together, kind of thing. This particular morning, guards waiting. The import-export director, Anne-Marie Capdeville, shows up. It's like, okay, let's open this. Let's turn off the general alarm. She's going to go up to her office. He's going to go use the potty. So she goes up to her office and there are some folks in the stairwell. They're wearing repairmen outfits. Now, there had been folks renovating the building. They're dressed to look like that.
Why are heists always like people in blue collar outfits? It's yeah, always.
I love it.
I do too.
I love a costume.
I do too.
So these four dudes are hiding out and they're wearing these getups, but also balaclavas covering their faces. And once she's seated at her desk, they bounce in there armed and they're like, ugh, grabbing her. You know, how many people are in the building with you? And she's like, one. And they're like, all right, two of you go get that guy. So they run and they like punch that guy to scare him like in the head, not like to knock him out or anything. They need him. But so, you know, I think the idea is just like, you're in some pain. You're freaked out. You trust that you should listen to these guys. And they bring Anne-Marie into the bathroom, tie her up, put her on the floor, take the guard back to his post to let the other workers in. Because if they don't get let in, that's going to be a quick something's wrong report going out.
Yeah.
So they let the other guys in. Mathieu, of course, Briquette. He parks in a private lot behind the building. He's carpooling with a couple of women that work there. They all waltz in. No sooner are the three of them in the building than these guys in the masks rush the two ladies, grab them by their hair, and pull them into the bathroom with Anne-Marie. They're all in there now. They take Mathieu, and they're like, let's go on up. They go up the stairs. He's at gunpoint, and they're like, open the safe. And he's shaking. He cannot remember the combination. He is overwhelmed. So they have to go downstairs and get one of the ladies. And they're like, that guy is freaked. She's like, I got you. She opens the safe. And one guy says to her when she's doing it, don't worry. I'm a lot nicer than the other guys. This guy,
what a relief,
is wearing, he's up close and personal. He's a guy with that was described as having a big honking nose peeking out of his, you know,
balaclava
mask. He's got, yeah, he's dressed hilarious. He's got like a bob wig on top.
That's
and then
fun.
And then a bucket hat.
Fun.
It's really like, I mean, but I'm, again, he just told her like, don't worry, I'm a nice guy. And it would just be really hard to take anything that guy says seriously with this bob wig and this bucket
he's
hat.
He's like
just
giving
like,
me like Dimitri
okay,
Martin.
Guy.
He's like Dimitri Martin, the comedian. You know what I mean? Who has long hair. Ignore me. Ignore that.
They're digging through the safe like pirates. They're grabbing the booty. And they hear one of the guys say, Fareed, there's no more time. There's no more time. And the Bob guy's like, oh, okay. They take the tapes out of the security cameras. They spray tear gas at everyone. And they run. That's to buy some time. They get in their minivan. You know, street cameras catch the minivan hustling down the street. It's a rented minivan. But they took a lot of jewels. 480 pieces of jewelry. So, yeah, and, like, here's the thing. They said the name Fareed is, like, some of the intel that they're able to relay when the cops get there, but they also said the name Voldemort, so it's very hard to know were using code names or, like, you know what I mean? They were just like, let's have bad guy names, Fareed and Voldemort.
Wait, what year is this?
This is 2007.
Jesus.
So they didn't leave behind fingerprints. They didn't leave behind DNA. One thing that's kind of weird, though, is that the building has volumetric radars. So any movement within that structure should have been detected, but they didn't. Nothing went off that night when they were hiding in the stairwell.
Hmm.
So they're like, huh. And they're like, check the sensors. They're like, they're working. Weird. The attorney general says, given the preparations involved, it looked like the work of hardcore gangsters from the banlieues or low-income suburbs outside Paris. Otherwise, it could only have been Les Pinks.
As in the Pink Panthers?
You bet. You bet your sweet booty. I mean, Pink Panthers, you know I love those guys, so why not? Why not a Pink Panther story today? So they go to the stairway that the gang had hidden in, and there's like powder everywhere. And they're like, oh, they used the fire extinguishers to like totally spray down the place so that there would be no DNA behind. And it kind of looks funny because there's foam everywhere and it just feels very cinematic. And as you'll recall, the Pink Panthers, they love like a throw to a cinematic mm-hmm. reference where they can. And there is a 1955 French film called Rififi where they use fire extinguishers to silence an alarm, like to somehow. Anyway, they're like, huh, could have been that. And again, the attorney general says this is a high spectrum armed robbery that could only have been executed by serious individuals at the top of the heap. As your Sinatra would say, of grand banditry. And I just had to read that quote because I love grand banditry.
Who doesn't love grand banditry?
Yes, everyone. Maybe not the attorney general. I think they're frustrated. So they start talking to one of the guys that used to be a Pink Panther that like is willing to chit chat. And he's like, I did hundreds of heists, smash and grabs, all different types of burglaries, anything that didn't hurt people. Because as you'll recall, the Pink Panthers are into stealing. They're not into killing anybody. Mm-hmm. But this guy, Pavel Punch Stanimirovic, is retired and is like, I'll talk to you about the infrastructure. You think there's a head. There's no head. There's no bottom. There's no tail. There's no beginning. He says, you're talking to the it. You're talking to the highest of the highest. You're talking to Oz, the man behind the mirror. It's me. What I did, I was the best. So
I love how braggadocious they are. I love it.
It is.
I love
it's amazing. We should all take a page from their book.
No imposter syndrome's there.
This guy, and he was like a really amazing mastermind. And he did all, he planned them. He could open vaults. He could pick locks. He said that he thought he was the fastest in the world at opening safes. And he would use that thing. Is, you know, the thing you use to shoot cows? I think it's like the thing in No Country for Old Men. Yeah, he would use that to open safes.
Great.
And
I like for when it's used for that and not for death. That's better.
They are looking. They're looking. They can't find anybody. It's been 4 months. And in February, there is a brand new, I don't know, cars, a Renault.
Sure.
A fancy car that's like going 75 miles an hour and not obeying traffic rules and being crazy. And they like pull it over and the guy driving it is named Fareed.
Ooh.
Okay. Fareed Alou.
And then they met Voldemort?
Then they pull over a guy named Voldemort. That would be so good. And they're like, oh, they really were using their names. Weird that your parents named you Voldemort.
Well, also, it's sad for him. He's like, it's a beautiful family name.
Yes,
the J.K. Rowling ruined.
Desecrated by that horrible woman.
That horrible woman.
So this guy's history is that he had a really hard childhood. He was in like a troubled youth home. He contracted HIV. Mm-hmm. He has a track record now, definitely has spent a lot of time for armed robbery and assaults and stuff. He's been in jail a bunch, and he's been almost living suicidally with this, you know, just like, whatever, I'm going to do whatever I want. And in his pocket when they get him is 40,000 euros, which is a lot to have in your pocket. And it's got like trace amounts of heroin and cocaine on it. They figure out the car he's driving was paid for in cash. Mm. It's looking
pretty fishy,
I have to say. Yeah. And they're like, you got to prove where you got this money or you're going to be under arrest. And he's like, give me a minute. 10 months later, December 3rd, 2008, he's like, I got the paperwork that shows where I got this money. The next day, after he proves that the money is clean.
He dies.
Harry's Winston.
That's just Harry's dick. But Harry Winston is a jewelry.
Yes. That. The jewelry store gets hit again. Oh. For $73.3 million. The break-in of the century is what the French media calls it.
Wow.
So.
Current heists are so wild to me because there's so much.
Is it just happened?
DNA.
It's
like so
in
crazy.
2008.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So what happened was these four guys that are really big are dressed as women. They have wigs. They have purses. They have scarves tied under their chin like grannies, like cartoons. They walk up to the door and a Cartier salesperson on the street sees it and is like, those are burglars.
But Cartier is like,
down the street,
they look like burglars. But Cartier is like, listen, let him get Harry Winston because Cartier is their competition and we don't fuck with them.
Well, the weird thing is what happens is the guard, I don't know, maybe the guard is shy, doesn't bring up how fucking weird they look and opens the door for them.
Huh.
No sooner do they walk in and they're like pulling out weapons and a hand grenade yelling, nobody move or I smoke you all. And they start waving their guns in the air. They do the same thing. They go to the manager's office. They have people lie face down. They get some of them to deactivate alarms. And then they just pirates booty the display cases. And the creepy tactic of intimidation that they use that's very effective, I would imagine, is they're calling all the people that work there by their names.
Ooh.
And sometimes telling them their home addresses casually.
Chad, you say someone's home address casually in that situation. That's so dark. Even if it's said casually, I wouldn't call it a casual reference.
No, it's not at all casual, and it doesn't make anyone feel casual. So it's very formal. And the other thing about the pirate's booty they're getting that day is that there's a 31-carat diamond solitaire ring that had been delivered to the store just the day prior. It is worth $8 million, and they know exactly where it's being stored. They're like, we know there's a secret compartment at the bottom of the main safe, and that's where it is, and we want it, and they get it. What they end up taking away, this $73 million, it's such a huge steal that they're offering $1 million reward yeah. for if you know anything. But they do all of this whole robbery in just like 20 minutes.
Jesus.
But as you'll recall, they spoke out loud and they had Slavic accents, which again is associated with
the Panthers.
Yeah, the Pink Panthers. So they're like, okay, they're definitely Panthers. And then they get an anonymous tip that they're in a Romanian hotel room selling the jewelry. And they've been bragging around town that they're the ones that like did the hit. Yeah. So they go to the police, go to bust these guys, which are real, in a Romania hotel room. But they're just less prolific jewel thieves. They're just a different group of jewel thieves that robbed a different store, which is, I mean, obviously the person that left that tip, I hope they got something.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, because it's like they did help you bust some jewel thieves. Come
what
on.
If it was the Pink Panthers that were on them to sort of get
and the they just wanted the million. They were like, it's more than what we got from the store. So one of them fled the store quickly enough that he left behind a handbag from his costume with a fingerprint on it. So they also did not have time to vanish the surveillance like they did in the other heist that had happened the year prior. So they're looking at the footage that is still on the cameras. And they're like, oh, well, it is weird that security guard let them in. They so obviously look like thieves. Malud Janad is the security guard's name. And they're like, oh, also, there were like moments with nobody on him. And he could have maybe alerted somebody that this was going on. Well, was he at the first burglary that happened in this store? No, he wasn't. Oh, okay, good. Okay. Oh, but he locked up the night before. Huh? Okay. What's he been doing lately? Oh, a lot of expensive trips with the girlfriend. We don't love it.
We do not love it. It's not looking good, guy.
It's not looking good, Janad. So he had been hanging out in this town nearby that's a notorious gambling town, so draws a particular crowd. It's 10 miles north of Paris. Mm-hmm. He goes to a gym there. He has been being a little bit braggadocious at the gym about how he's a security guard at this job where all these rich people he ends up brushing shoulders with, celebrities that are coming to look at the jewelry or, I don't know, rent it, whatever. He's like, yeah, and the crazy thing is there's like all these holes in the security system. I mean, like that I know about and I alone know about. And so somebody that he's working out with or is, I don't know, in the showers is like,
ego will always get your ass.
This guy Patrick is like, you know, that's really interesting. I have a brother-in-law that's kind of a gangster, and he would love to know this stuff. He'd love to work with you. He'd love to rob the store. I mean, if you know all this. And the guy's kind of like, Janad's kind of like, huh, because Patrick's just a construction guy. He's like, yeah, Patrick. Like, okay, Patrick. But then he meets the brother-in-law, Dudu. D-O-U-D-O-U, which is a name that means,
doo-doo.
Like a nickname that means doo-doo. It means like stuffed animal.
Love
that.
So it's
a very tough gangster name. It's a very cool name.
Again.
Doo-doo.
It's I like
the stuffy.
It. Doo-doo the stuffy. Let's go.
Le stuffy. Doo-doo is the real deal. He spent like 16 years in prison for robbery and drug trafficking. So he's
if
like
a criminal, though. I would like to be known as like a teddy bear, though. You know what I mean? Like that's, you know, because you're like, I'm good. I'm bad, but I'm good. And, you know.
Guess who Dudu's best friend is?
Voldemort.
Fareed. Close. Close.
Really close. Fareed.
So when things start to get serious with this plan, Janad's like, whoa, I was just like working out and bragging. Like, and they're like, no.
You're
going to do this job. But they don't do it by intimidation. They do it by befriending him. Mm. Like, he's a lonely guy that, like, they basically, like, take him in and are, like,
we're your
drinking
friends.
With him and being like, we're besties. Like, this is going to be great. And you're going to be a part of it. And this is so fun. And let's have some more wine. And then he, you know, gets a buzz on and is like, okay. Like, I'll do it. And that, boom, they have an inside man now.
Wow. Wowie zowie.
So their inside man can deactivate the alarm.
Okay.
The night before, allowing them to sleep in a stairway overnight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Undetected, but then can turn it back on when he arrives and make it look like that never happened. So he's a really good
he's a good friend to have.
Partner in crime. Yeah. He's a great partner in crime. Friend. And it goes so well that first time that, wouldn't you know it, they go back and do a second time.
Because it worked.
You know?
They got greedy. That's where they fucked up. They got super greedy.
Mm-hmm. They get an informant. And the informant gives Fareed and Dudu's names. And their phones get wiretapped. And basically, it's they're tailing people. They're bugging a Jaguar that Dudu drives. They're figuring out that they obviously don't use their phones to talk about much of this, but they do use payphones and they speak in code and they use the ringtone of Le Marseille, which is like the day of glory has arrived, to signal that they're going to do a payday. They've got a buyer.
Okay.
Because they're selling all this like very illegally, but they hear them referencing things like saying words like carrots or referencing diamond prices. Like there's enough there that it's very, very damning. So they get whatever warrants they need. And in 2009, they follow Fareed going to Dudu's home. And Fareed is going there and his blink goes off. He's like, this is off.
This is
like
bad.
He pulls up and he's like, And he even leaves, I think, and drives around the block. But then it's his payday and he's going to get all this money. So he does end up going. They hug each other. There's a handoff. And all these cops jump out in like ski masks and swarm them.
Ooh.
So 6 years after the fact, in February 2015, Dudu, Fareed, and Janad, the security guard, are all, and five of their accomplices, five not main characters, are going to court to get tried. And what had happened is they'd gone to Dudu's house and they'd found 800,000 euro. They found jewels from the second heist. They found this area that has fresh cement over a drain pipe outside. They dig it up and there's hand cream bottle inside that has three pairs of earrings and it has that 31 carat $8 million ring.
Whoa.
So they're like, it's you. And also that's like a signature Pink Panther move is to hide shit in
drain, like
face cream. They do weird stuff like that all the time.
Oh, that's so cool, though. That's so cool.
And they also find a fucking rocket launcher. Dudu, you had some weird stuff.
Dudu, you were bad. No good.
And they're like, we think you're the leader, Dudu. And he's like, no way, not me. And then they're like, Fareed, talk to us. And Fareed's like, I was part of this. And they're like, talk to us about anyone else, though. And he's like, no. And it's really sad, actually, because in the trial, it somehow gets revealed that Fareed and Dudu aren't friends anymore, but they were best friends. And they had like a friend divorce. And it's like very sad. But they still don't rat on each other. But it does become clear that they're not friends anymore. And I don't know why I feel sad about that, because I didn't know anything about their friendship. But I, for some reason, feel sad about it. I think I feel like Fareed needed a friend.
You want it to be like a little Ocean's 11.
And I think Fareed felt really like alone in his life. And I was just like, oh, you have Dudu. And now he doesn't even have Dudu.
But does he have like Jadid? What's his name?
Janad. Oh, Janad. Janad is such a dingling. In his trial, he's just crying like a baby, weeping, and being like, I don't know why I did it. It's so dumb. I just wanted to fit in. And he goes, if you didn't catch me, there'd have been like two more burglaries in the store. I didn't know what to do. Like, he's not like I feel like the judge is like, get out of here, Janad. They gives him 5 years. They give Fareed 10. They give Dudu 15.
5, 10, and 15.
Yeah. Yeah. And Fareed says, when they're talking about him, they're like, you know, was this a game to you? What was this? And he goes, I was invited and the door was open. It was not a game. Not at all. I went to Harry Winston for the money and it was very serious. But it's like, Fareed, dude, you guys were wearing like hysterical costumes. Like we saw that bob wig and that bucket hat. What were you thinking?
What? Like who wore it best?
Who wore it best?
That's a great story.
Of the 881 pieces that were stolen, a bunch of them they found at Dudu's, but 493 are still unaccounted for.
Ooh, I bet those vacations
Pink
were
Panthers.
Fun. What a fun year they had,
dunna,
followed by... Wow. Thank you for another heist. What a fun episode today of not too dark, not too creepily, but very truly. True.
Very, very truly.
No, mine was dark.
Anything
mine
I read
dark.
About the Pink Panthers, I fucking love reading about them. They're just like
They're
a fun ride
They're so
to
fun.
Get on board. I say that as someone that has never been pistol whipped or tear gassed or a victim of a serious robbery. But still, can we all just agree it's a bit cinematic?
I think you can agree with that. Hey, okay. Like, listen, subscribe, Patreon, laugh, love, dinner, lunch,
learn,
eat, mazel. Goodbye.
Ciao.